Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, good gardening, and we are live and lively from World Outdoor Emporium West, which is just north of Highway 70, and it's on Highway 61 on Granville Drive. So right as you pass Wentzville Parkway, get ready to turn left. There'll be a sign that says Granville Drive, and I mean, it is right there. So just be prepared, or else you're going to have to go down 61 a little bit further and then come back around, which is not horrible. But if you're headed out here, you should be heading out here, because today, with this temperature and weather and everything else, World Outdoor Emporium West is part of the Pondorama, and this is a whole thing with basically put together by the St. Louis Water Garden Society. They have locations in Illinois, locations in Missouri. It's not just retail locations. This one happens to be. But what you get to do is you buy tickets, you get to go into people's yard, check out their water gardens and everything else. And if you're giving any kind of thought at all about any kind of water feature, water garden, you should get out here and take a look at some of the things they have here. So it's just absolutely fantastic. They've got trees, they've got shrubs, perennials, annuals. The annuals, 50% off. I got a couple, and when they told me the total, I said, what? It can't be that low. But anyway, so they've got mulch, they've got rock, they've got gravel, they've got anything for the outdoors. That's what is really, really important. They've got all kinds of demonstration hardscapes. They've got retaining walls, edgers, and the coolest thing to me here is they've got goats. I don't know what they do with the goats, but they got goats, a little goat farm. If you go down in the valley and head over to where the greenhouses are, you can hear the goats up on top of the hill. So that's kind of cool. Anyway, fully stocked. It's just a great place. 16 acres. So you say, well, how am I going to get around in 16 acres? Well, they have golf carts for you to use. And I think they allow you to drive the golf carts without even taking a driving test. So you got to be very, very, this is a cool place. Let's put it that way. So this is World Outdoor Emporium West. It's north of Highway 70. And Greg is producing back in studio. Mike is here as the engineer. The second hour is the tip of the trowel. I'll be giving the tip of the trowel in a few moments. But first, thanks to you for having me on your show. And remember, if you were not there, I would not be here. So questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. How about your annuals? How about your bulbs? How about your edibles? How about your ground covers, houseplants, tropicals, lawns, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, water gardens? Please remember, my answers, comments, and opinions are certainly not the only garden path to take. It's just an option for you to consider. I'm Mike Miller. I've written 5 gardening books. 2 are currently available at various locations. And also, I write articles for Missouri Gardener magazine. And during the week, I do something called a walk and talk, where I come to your home and answer questions that you may have. Also, keep my eyes open for things that may be impacting your landscape that you haven't even considered. So you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, and go to the homepage, and there'll be a phone number and email address, and you can contact me. Today's tip of the trowel, which is a special recognition for an individual, group, or a situation that's made an impression on me. It's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the trowel goes out to everybody who's, and again, I've given a tip of the trowel to several different groups, and this is a group of just everybody that's out there trying to make their landscape, you know, as good as they possibly can. This has been a very difficult 2-year cycle and sequence. So tip of the trowel goes out to you for trying and not giving up. And I'm absolutely amazed when I walk by so many people's houses or drive by and I see what a wonderful job they've done. And nobody's going to have a perfect yard. You can't even go down to the botanical garden and have a perfect landscape. It's not going to happen, because this is the real world. But thanks to you for making the St. Louis metropolitan area, Illinois side, Missouri side, west, east, doesn't matter where, north or south, making it a better place to live and neater stuff to see. Let's take a couple of calls before we go to a break. Let's go to Norman, and Norman's in St. Charles. Hi, Norman.
Yeah, hi. I have two questions. One of them, Mike, is about my geraniums. I have a flower bed. It's been there for 20 years, same dirt. Well, I fertilize it every year, that Margolite, I believe you call it. It's you always said that you could put as much of that down as you wanted. But I put that down before I spaded and put my geraniums in. They haven't done a thing. They're just green leaves, and they're not. And I put miracle fertilizer on them with water. So is it a bad geranium year?
It could be, from the weather standpoint. And is the foliage look good? Does it look healthy?
Yeah. Yes, it does.
So, I mean, in reality, it's a little bit premature for the geraniums to be flowering anyway. When you buy them in flower, they've been forced into a greenhouse circumstance.
Yeah,
you bring them home, those flowers are finished, and then for the plant to get the energy, get the root system set up to reflower. So I think it's just a matter of time more so than anything else if they look healthy.
Okay, well, I never had that trouble in that bed. But anyhow, my second question is, I do have declined azalea. I had the people come out to have a lawn service and said that. Now, here's what I plan to do. It's about 10 feet wide. It's spotty at about 10 by 3 feet. I'm going to cut that out, and I'm going to go down to the dirt, and then I'm going to mix new soil with compost and then put fescue in there. Is that all right?
If you don't mind, the fescue could invade into the zoysia. The zoysia could invade into, the fescue. So if you don't mind the mixture, that's up to you.
But is that a good way to do it?
You could, yeah. You're doing exactly how you should do it. Now, putting seed down this time of year is going to be a little bit iffy. Understand that because of the temperature and everything else, you could have some real problems. It could germinate, it could get hot, and then there it goes.
Should I wait till fall?
Yes, that would be the better thing to do, so you won't waste mental money and real money both.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your service.
Well, thank you. And now let's go to Ronald. Ronald's in North County. Hi, Ronald.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to know, can you transplant a hostas plant from one location to another, like from the front yard to the backyard? The hostas already has sent out a flower bloom, and I like to transplant it because I have a shrub that's kind of shaped up, kind of hiding it, taking the appearance away from it. Can it be done without damaging it?
They can certainly be transplanted. Doing it this time of year is going to be somewhat iffy. Hosta are very tough. As long as you get the whole root system and everything else and a little bit of soil beyond the root system, you could do it this time of year. Ideally, you would do it either in the fall, let's say after mid to late August, all the way up until, let's say, end of October, or do it next year just as coming up out of the ground. So this is not the ideal time to do it. If it was something other than a hosta, I'd say definitely don't do it this time of year because we just don't know what's going to happen weather-wise or anything else. So if you can wait and just do it at the more, let's say, correct time, that would be to the advantage of your hosta.
I see. All right, then. That is about it. I thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Thanks, Ronald. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's go to Andy's yard, and Andy lives in St. Louis. Hi, Andy.
Good morning, Mike. How are you today?
Very good.
All right. Mike, I've got a cherry tree that's probably about 15 years old. And in the summer of 2016, we had the most biggest bumper crop ever, probably had 100 pounds of cherries on the tree.
Whoa.
Then we had that weird fall in 16. It got cold quick. The leaves all dropped, and then it warmed up again, and about 20% of the tree got new leaves on it, like in November, December. Then it went through the winter, and the next spring, the crop was lousy. We got about 12 cherries. And then I thought, let me wait just one more year. And this year we had, you know, a few more cherries, but it wasn't that great at all. Most of the birds got them. So my question is that cherry tree, like, lived its life, or is there a way to bring a cherry tree back, or is it just the weather?
It could be weather-related for sure, but what I would do, what I would consider is not doing fertilizing per se. I would do something called deep root feeding around your tree. So go out about half the distance from the trunk to the extension of the branches with an earth auger, which is a drill bit, drill holes about one or 2 feet apart, concentric circles all the way out to just beyond the drip line, backfill those holes with compost, try to feed the soil and see if that's going to help you, the cherry circumstance. Now, do you know if this is a dwarf cherry? Is this a semi-dwarf? Is this a standard-sized cherry?
Yeah, the tree has gotten probably 20 feet tall, give or take.
Yeah. So it's probably full-sized, you know, cherry tree, so it's not a dwarf any. But I would go ahead and just, like I said, do the deep root feeding and do that in the fall and see how that impacts just overall, you know, the performance of the tree.
And any branches or, you know, limbs that have died, and there have been a few of those, just cut those off, I assume?
Absolutely. Don't leave any stubs on anything whatsoever.
Okay. And then the deep root feeding, about how far apart are the holes, and all you use is compost, that's it?
Yeah, just backfill the holes with compost. The holes are any place between like 1 and 2 feet apart. You go a circle all the way around the tree, then you go out 1 or 2 feet and do another circle, then you go out 1 or 2 feet to another circle until you finally go just beyond the drip line.
And about how deep should I go again?
About 6 or 8 inches.
That's it. Okay, very good. I'll try it. Thank you very much.
Great. Good luck with that. And now let's go to Chuck. And Chuck is in Shiloh, Illinois. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. Good morning. Mike, I called you about three weeks ago about my sawtooth oak. It was 6 years old when Crane Tree Farm installed it professionally. I was having problems with the leaves, the tree leafing out. So you gave me the same recommendation you just gave to Andy, in order to save myself some labor, since the tree is pretty big now, and I don't know if Andy's still listening, there's a company out there, Mike, that does deep root feeding professionally, and
right.
2 weeks ago, they came out and injected basically a compost tea mix, probiotics, and the whole nine yards. They were able to diagnose that the roots of the sawtooth oak were hit by a fungus, which was halting the uptake of nutrients.
Oh.
So they the company came out and did their application. They shoot this environmentally friendly mixture into the yard using very light compressed air. I mean, they're not blowing holes in it. And I'll be dang, Mike, if the tree ain't leafing out fully now, it's unbelievable.
That's perfect.
Yeah. So, I don't know the guy. My arborist actually recommended the company to me. So if anybody's interested, I don't know if I'm allowed to give a plug, Mike, so I'll ask your permission.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, great. It's the company is called Roots Plus, R-O-O-T-S Plus, Roots Plus. And you can talk to an arborist. They may know about them. If you want to Google them, that's fine. But I'm very picky about my yard, Mike. I don't want anybody in it that I don't trust, and these folks have done an incredible job. Usually they say give us about a year or a season to let the compost tea mix and probiotics take effect, but this is
right.
Incredible.
That does sound great. So thanks, Chuck, and now let's go to Alan, and Alan's in St. Charles. Hi, Alan.
Yes, good morning, Mike. Thanks for your valuable time. Two quick questions, real common ones for you. I want to prevent weeds from coming up in the flower garden and around the shrubs. So I want to put down a weed block, and I don't know whether to use the type that's, you know, allows water to drip through, or do you prefer a more of a type of block that allows, you know, no moisture to penetrate? And then the follow-up on is I want to put some mulch on top, and I see a lot of people use that traditional red-colored mulch you can get anywhere. But, you know, I just wanted your opinion, Mike, on a type of mulch that, you know, is a nice, finished, professional look. You know, and I know everybody's taste varies, but, you know, just in your gut, something that you prefer. And I'd be grateful if you could comment on that.
Sure. Well, basically, you want to make sure that water penetrates through any kind of landscape fabric you put down. You got to have that, because it could cause a nightmare. Originally, when people started doing, you know, things to as weed barriers, they were just using black plastic, and it turned into a nightmare. It damaged a lot of the plants, you know, plant situations for the root systems because they couldn't breathe. It's not only letting water in, it's letting air. I mean, your ground breathes. So it, you know, it exhales, it inhales. So it's a living, you know, quality product. So, you know, in that situation. So that's, you know, I would say that. And then with the mulch, it's really a personal choice more so than anything else. Since you're in St. Charles, you can go to the St. Louis Composting location, or just go to their website. They have all kinds of different mulches. They have all kinds of different colors. Personally, as I have said many times, I like the cedar mulch just because it's a, you know, I just happen to like it. I like how it looks. I like it, you know, I put it on pots. I put it on the ground both. But that's just a personal choice. You know, they have, I forget how many different varieties they have, not just color-wise, just different varieties.
Okay, one follow-up question with regards to that weed barrier. Is there any particular brand that may last longer? You know, because we did this years ago, and, you know, it, of course, it broke down over time. I guess they all do. But is there a, is there a particular one, Mike, or?
Not that I'm, you know, not, I can't say there's one that's going to last so much longer than another one. There's, you know, to be honest with you. So it's just like everything. It's just like you can have a couch, and you, the couch is 15 years old. You can tell where you've been sitting, or somebody's been sitting on that couch. Things just kind of wear out. There's nothing that's going to be permanent. So if you've got multiple years out of, you know, whatever you put down, I'd certainly have to be satisfied with that.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much, Michael. Appreciate your time.
Certainly. And now let's go to June. And June is in St. Charles, too, so we're going to save a little gas.
This is June, and my problem is the tomato plants. I've grown them for years. This is the first year I've encountered the black spot on them. Ooh. Am I doing something wrong? I put the same amount of water on them every day, but I've picked off about six. I've got them in, I got it in a bucket, a huge bucket. And what am I doing wrong?
So do you, are you talking about the black spot on the end of the actual tomato?
Correct. Uh-huh.
So what this is, it means that the fertilizer you're using doesn't have any calcium. That's called blossom end rot, and that's a result of not having enough calcium in your soil. You know, you could get the calcium and put it in, but usually if you just use a tomato food, it will have the calcium in the fertilizer.
That's what I'm using.
So then, I mean, if it's, if you're using tomato food and it says it has calcium in it, why you're getting the blossom end rot, I'm not sure. That doesn't make sense.
I know. That's what I thought. Maybe you could give me the answer to that.
Well, it is. It's a calcium circumstance. So
that's what I thought. And this usually I don't even fertilize them. This is the first year I used the fertilizer, and I'm having all this trouble. And it's they're planted in potting mix. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, but that's what I'm doing. The pot is big enough for this plant. But
and the pot has drainage.
Yes, it does.
Okay, so I mean, you're doing everything right.
Well, yeah. I guess it's just a stupid plant.
Exactly. Get rid of that stupid plant.
I'm tempted. Thank you.
Certainly. Yeah, I mean, you're doing everything exactly as you should. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. And this is a time of year for pruning, yes, on certain trees. The maple trees, summer pruning, birch trees, summer pruning, and beech trees, summer pruning. Most of the other trees, you're not going to want to be doing it in the summertime, but these trees, summer pruning works very well. And if you do any kind of pruning, remember, do not leave stubs. So if you're cutting off a long branch, you want to cut it off in sections, but your final cut is going to leave only about a quarter to a half inch, let's say, nub, not a stub. Don't cut it back and leave like a 6, 8, 10, 12, 2 or 3 feet stub there, because that's just an invitation for potential problems, be it disease and or insect oriented. So that's why you do not want to leave any stubs. If you've got houseplants out there and they're looking fine, go ahead and give them another, you know, give them some fertilizer. They're going to certainly appreciate it. And let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Sue, and Sue lives in Creve Coeur. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions.
Sure.
One is, I have spider mites on some tomato plants and veggies, and I'm wondering what is the best, like, a natural type of killer for those? I've tried Tabasco sauce with water. It seemed a little harsh, and I didn't know if there was something else you might recommend, because I don't really like putting chemicals on my produce.
Right. Are you sure you got spider mites?
I think so. I mean, it appears that
the best way to check to see if you... Yeah, it seems a little early for spider mites to be there, but because it was so warm, they could certainly be there. If you think you have spider mites, and this is for anyone, take a piece of white... Okay, so, but here's a way to check. You can take a piece of white paper out, hold the paper underneath a leaf or, you know, whatever that you think there are spider mites. Shake the leaf, the foliage of where you think the spider mites are, and you should see some spider mites drop off and land on that white piece of paper. Now, if you do have spider mites, there are some organic products you might, you know, certainly consider. You might, you know, depends upon what you want to do. You know, it's just, I would say if you got spider mites this early, if you're going to end up being battling them. But what I would probably do, if you want to be as safe as possible, is just take a hose, you know, use a hose, not you know, the harsh, hard water, and spray the underside of leaf and spray your plants off. That's going to be the most organic way you can go about doing it.
Okay. It's just leaves that have little teeny tiny dots and they're yellowing. Just has that look. Maybe it's some other kind of bug. I'm not certain.
Yeah, it may not be a bug. It may just be the age of the foliage. Are they near the bottom of the plant, or are they
tomatoes? They're my tomato plants. It's pretty much all over.
Oh, so it's all over all of them. Yeah, I would just try a stream of water and knock them off that way.
Okay.
Then, if you wanted to try. Yeah, and then another option would be try an insecticidal soap after that.
Okay. All right, I can do that. And then number two, I've heard about this like the last couple of years about oak trees having those big, nasty, hard balls that are falling off a mountain if it was a virus or something. And I still
have one.
And it's still dropping those things all over the cars and making dents. Is that forever, or is there anything I can do for them?
No, there's really not too much you can do. It's a small wasp. The female wasp lays the eggs on the little stems. She penetrates into the bark, and then consequently, when those eggs hatch, they bloat that thing, that gall, G-A-L-L, and that's sort of a protective mechanism to keep, you know, anybody from coming along and eating them. And if they're in one tree, they're generally going to stay, you know, the next generation, next generation are going to stay kind of in that, you know, that area. So that if you've got them, you're probably always going to have them. There are some injections that may work, but I still have not seen any that are proven to really eradicate the problem. And the galls that are existing on there, whether they're new ones coming or not, you know, potentially can drop like what you're experiencing.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, I appreciate your service, and thanks for taking the call.
Sure. And now let's go to Cape Girardeau and into Mike Shard. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike. I'm looking for an easy out. I have a small vegetable garden. We had beans this spring. I just pulled them out because they were done, and I have weeds left. Can I put Roundup on that and then plant later this fall?
Some people don't like to use Roundup in any circumstance. To me, if you've got a weed circumstance, I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that.
So how long before I can plant again, Mike?
Oh, just a couple weeks. Just make sure the weeds are dead. And then, you know, after that, there is, you know, the Roundup does not stay in the soil per se. So it doesn't have a residual aspect in the soil, though there's all these, you know, agricultural circumstances and things like that that say it does. That's what all this argument about, you know, nobody should be using Roundup. But I, you know, certain tests are saying that it does, but I just don't think, you know, personally, and I'm no scientist by any means, that it does have any kind of residual effect in the soil.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, so just you know, a couple weeks after the weeds have died, then you can prepare the soil, get ready for your fall planting or your next generation of vegetables or whatever you're going to plan on doing that way. So thanks, Mike. And now Gerald lives in Ellsbury. Hi, Gerald.
Hello, how you doing?
Very good.
Yes. I have a Kwanzaa cherry tree that I planted back in late March. It was about 6 to 8 foot tall, and it's taken root, and the leaves are pretty green and stuff. But would it hurt to put any Miracle-Grow around at this time of year and soak it in real good? I get them roots to go ahead and penetrate.
Fertilizing trees, I don't, that's not one of the things I like, whether it's tree spikes, whether it's Miracle-Grow or anything else. It's just, you know, I would prefer to feed the soil, and that's adding compost to your soil as opposed to just trying to use some fertilizer, because that's not really going to help the tree overall's health for the long term. It's not going to really even change it all that much. So personally, I would not be putting any kind of fertilizer like that around it.
Okay. Next question is, what's your opinion on the blue moon wisteria?
As long as you got a trellis or, you know, an arbor or whatever you're going to grow it on, then you understand how big wisteria can potentially get, that's what you're really looking at. And how damaging it can be if you have it too close to your house, how damaging it can be to an arbor, those kind of things, because they are, and I know this is a specific variety, but I have not, seen it for the long term, so I don't know what's going to happen with it. But just wisteria in general can be very damaging.
Okay. Okay, that's what I needed to know then. Thank you.
Yeah, but I mean, they're great. I love them. But, it's one of those kind of plants where I just, I prefer to find somebody else that has them in their yard when they're in flower. Then I go by and check them out and things like that. But they can be destructive. But if you've got a structure that's can handle it, then it shouldn't be a problem whatsoever. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. Back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, any questions or concerns? We got about 10 minutes or so. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Last night, for the first time this year, at least in my neighborhood, cicadas, or as we call them as kids, locusts. Tracy called them re-rees. So those screaming things that leave those exoskeletons stuck to your tree. I mean, we used to love, out in Ellisville at that time, there were so many of them. We'd stick them on our shirts and everything else and run into the house saying we've been attacked by all these things. But the cicadas, yes, they're going to, with that screaming sound and those exoskeletons, they do, a little bit of a problem. So it's not just the sound that can be nutty as heck, but the females will slit the underside of twigs or branches and they deposit their eggs in that slit. Then consequently, they know how to slit it just right. It's going to cause that twig to die. And then guess what? It's going to drop to the ground, and then, yes, those eggs are hatch, and then consequently you're going to have more and more cicadas. Also, this time of year is, guess what, grubs. There's five different kinds of grubs in this region. So, but grub control, remember, it does not rid your yard of moles. Moles' main diet is earthworms. Certainly, you know, grubs can do some damage. Moles will eat them if they come across them. But how moles are tunneling, what direction they go, they hear earthworms crawling. So consequently, that's what they're tunneling towards, is the sound of earthworms digging below the surface. Grubs just kind of lay there, and just there's only, out of the five different kinds of grubs we have, only one of them really causes damage, and it's mainly to bluegrass. So it's the annual grub, but the other ones can be there. They can do some damage, but nothing like that one grub does. So grub control, again, is to control the grubs. It's not necessarily to make it so your yard is not going to have moles. And if your yard, I've been to plenty of houses, they say, why does my yard have moles and my neighbor's doesn't? Well, the yard that has the moles is a nice yard. And the neighbor's yard is a horrible yard, so there's no earthworms, so there's nothing for the moles to eat. So they just say, I'm not going in that yard. Let's go back to St. Charles and go into Dee's yard. Hi, Dee.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I have two questions. Can I dig up my tulip and daffodil bulbs now and replant them next fall?
If you want to, you don't have to, but you could try it.
Yeah, I
mean,
want to
some people dig them up and then, yeah. So yeah, go ahead and dig them up. Don't, you know, don't replant them until fall. So dig them up, clean all the soil off of them, and wrap them. You know, put layers of newspaper in between them and put them in a paper bag in a dark, cool spot.
Wrap in newspaper.
Yeah, just put layers of newspaper. So in other words, don't pile them up on top of each other.
Okay.
You don't have to wrap them, but just layers of newspaper in between.
Okay. My hydrangea roots keep coming up out of the ground and running along the top of the ground. And I keep covering up with dirt, and they keep...
Well, the dirt, unless you mix the dirt in with the existing soil, it's just going to keep eroding away. So just put some mulch on them. If they're healthy and everything else, it doesn't really hurt as long as the plants are healthy. But just use mulch. Don't try to cover them with dirt.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. And now let's go a little bit east into Chesterfield and into Jim's yard. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I have two questions. Number one is, my rose bushes, the leaves on them look like something's eating at them, and I've used the... you know, the insecticide that you put in the ground, the root.
Right.
I guess it's a fertilizer and an insecticide. I've done it twice, and it's still not, I haven't noticed a big change in them. And then the second thing, what's the grass? Is it what's that invasive grass that starts to grow this time of year inside your lawn? It's a real broadleaf, a thick type of blade. Is it sedge? There's a name for it.
It could be nutsedge.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, nutsedge. So that's really like, you know, a wetter type environment. So nutsedge, you got to use a very specific herbicide like Sedge Ender or something along that line. Regular herbicides, you know, don't work on it at all.
Okay. So there's one made specifically for that grass?
Exactly. I mean, it will say Sedge Ender on it. So Bonide makes that, you know, that product. There are other products as well. And as far as, what was your other question related?
On the rose bushes, the leaves look like there's something eating at them, and yet I've used that insecticide fertilizer that you put in the ground,
the systemic,
you know, the root, around the root. Yeah, systemic. Is there something going on with the weather that's causing them to look that way?
Yeah, that's probably more so than anything. I would say there should be new growth coming on your roses. If you pruned them back and everything else. So the red growth is the new foliage, the new buds and everything else. Are you seeing holes in those, or are you just seeing holes in the older leaves that are closer to the bottom of the ground?
They're kind of everywhere on the, I haven't looked close enough. I don't think it's on the new growth, it's on the older growth.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about the older growth. That damage has already been done. Those insects may have already moved on because they can do the damage as a larvae of some kind of insect. So in other words, make the holes or whatever, and then they morph into an adult and just move on. So I wouldn't worry about holes in the older growth. If you start to see holes in the newer growth, then I would be, that would be a concern. But if you put systemic insecticide, that should take care of your problem.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Yep, and now let's go to Highland, Illinois, and into Rich's yard. Hi, Rich.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I've got two questions. One is I planted a butterfly bush about 2 years ago, and, man, that thing was growing beautiful and had a lot of butterflies. And I cut it back last fall, and now it looks like a dead twig. Is it going to come back? Some people say, they'll come back, and I've been watering it with my other plants, but it just looks dead.
Cut back on the watering. They don't want a whole lot of watering. Some of the butterfly bushes the new growth hasn't emerged this year. I don't know exactly what's, what the circumstance is with them. So I've seen several.
Twigs.
Yeah. So just, kind of be patient with it. If it looked healthy in the past, then, just kind of keep your fingers crossed. But you should see some new growth, at least some foliage, opening up soon. And if it's not, then I would say it's probably dead. Through getting drowned or through whatever, other circumstance that could have impacted it.
Okay. My other question is, I put some sod in part of my yard in April, and I've watered it, and all of a sudden I'm getting some brown spots, and so somebody said, well, you're not watering enough, and now I've got, like the other gentleman just said, I got a lot of nutsage, but I still have all these brown spots. Do I need to fertilize, what do I need to do?
What kind of sod is it?
It's bluegrass fescue.
Definitely do not fertilize. No fertilizer on bluegrass this time of year. So just those spots, they could be result of lots of different things. But just kind of keep your, just hold off on doing anything other than just, controlling the nutsedge. But realize that, I'm going to mention this again. Read the label before you apply any herbicide, because if the temperature gets too hot, you can do some damage by putting an herbicide down or putting a fertilizer down. So just realize that. Whoops, we're just about out of time. Mike Miller, KMWatch Garden Hotline. See you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.